Good morning, everyone, and welcome to everyone listening online as well. And if you're celebrating St. Patrick's Day, happy St. Patrick's Day to you. My neighbourhood is very Irish, so they are celebrating St. Patrick's Day today. And my mother-in-law-to-be is very Irish too, so I would say very Irish. She's American, but in her mind, she's Irish, which is lovely. So she's celebrating today. So happy St. Patrick's Day if you are celebrating that. So it's lovely to be here, and thank you for having me. I'm a bit rusty, I have to say, but I'm going to attempt to share my screen and play our opening song so we can all greet each other in the chat room or waving, whatever you want to do, or wearing our green hats if we're doing that. So just bear with me a second. I had the fun experience this morning of my computer turned to only typing in Hebrew. And so I had a bit of a mild panic. I wouldn't even be able to log in to Zoom or anything I needed, but fortunately, there we go. Okay, so let me see if I can share with you. Sorry about this.
We are awakening to the calling of the mystic, awakening in the flowering of the heart. Everybody here melting into presence, overflowing effervescence, rising in love. Oh, awakening, awakening, awakening. Ah, oh, ah, we are awakening.
Okay. The full version this morning. I never know if we do a shortened version, but I didn't feel called to stop it. So good morning. And I was nervous to look at the chat and leave Zoom, leave the screen share. So I trust that everyone has greeted each other this morning. So I just wanted to begin by reading core value. So we accept our one true self, which is one presence or being, non-dual, without beginning or end, and absolutely changeless. We live this value by practicing letting go of the belief in the individual self as who we are. And today, so I thought I'd share about as we always do, I suppose, this is about true self and the practice of letting go of the belief in the individual self. So this one seemed apt. But to start with some announcements, and I'm not confident enough to share my screen and jump around the site, so I'll just try and talk you through some of them instead. The first is that Regina's leading a retreat in Oregon from July 12th to 14th, 2019. And the name of that retreat is Awakening at Home. And it's a retreat for anyone who's interested in spiritual development, regardless of whether they have experience with Awakening Together's teachings or not. So suitable for everyone you know, as well as yourselves. Since Awakening is not an intellectual pursuit, but a practice-centered pursuit, and Regina will focus on helping participants master the practices that are most helpful to awakening. This retreat, you'll be able to master the practices that are most helpful to awakening and sharpen meditation, contemplation, inquiry, journaling, and mind watching skills in a less talk, more practice retreat. And you can expect to have fun, says Regina. The full retreat packages include meals and private rooms in shared apartment-like suites. And there are also retreat-only commuter packages available. And you can go to awakeningtogether.org and look for the Oregon retreat under retreats and classes. Also under retreats and classes, you'll find the 5-day self-inquiry dyad retreat. That's at the Retreat House from April the 15th to 19th, so not long. Dyads are an incredibly powerful way to practice self-inquiry, and it's possible that you can make more progress in 1 week at a dyad retreat than maybe in 1 or 2 years of self-inquiry alone. They're really, really deep. And it's the Awakening Together's most popular retreat yet, but there is still plenty of space at the retreat, just not at the Retreat House. That's now full. But if you're interested in coming to that retreat, I recommend that you get a private cabin at Two Fox Cabins in Levita. You will find Two Fox Cabins is price effective. The cabins have kitchenettes, so you can fix your own breakfast and dinners, and you'll have the quiet that is necessary for effective experience at the retreat. And that website is twofoxcabins.com. Two like the number, a fox like the animal, cabins.com. And for full details about the self-inquiry dyad retreat and to register again, you can go to the website, awakening-together.org, and look under retreats and classes. And then under that, you'll find a dropdown that's retreats at the Retreat House. And you'll find all the other retreats that are lined up for this year as well. Thank you. And Regina's just typed in the room the website for Two Fox Cabins. Next Sunday is a movie discussion group. And this month's movie is The Sea of Trees. In the film An American Man, Matthew McConaughey, no less, travels to Suicide Forest near Mount Fuji in Japan with a plan to kill himself. And in the forest, he meets a Japanese man who also came to the forest planning to kill himself, but he's had a change of heart and needs his help, needs help finding his way out of the forest. And the two men form an unexpected relationship and take an unplanned journey of self-reflection. If you haven't seen it yet, Sea of Trees, you've still got this week to see it. And then join us for the movie discussion group, which is next Sunday, the 24th of March, I believe, at 8 p.m. Eastern. Also, I believe I'm right in saying, well, I know I'm right in saying that the play sheet of the questions to ask yourself during the movie are up, and they're great. I don't know how you would find them. I didn't find a link. I just searched movie. Under to read. Okay, thank you. I just searched movie in the search box on the website and it came up straight away and I found them really, really helpful. You can rent Sea of Trees through most streaming providers like Netflix, Amazon Prime, YouTube, Vudu, iTunes and more. So I hope you join us for that. And then finally, another reminder, a notice for this evening, tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, I will be joined with our guest speaker, Reverend Kelly Barber. So Kelly is an Awakening Together minister who was ordained on February the 27th, 2016. Now a little over 3 years since her ordination, Kelly will join us in the sanctuary this evening to share from her clarity and experience. Again, that's 8 p.m. tonight, right after Regina's Guiding Light program. So please join us for that. Wonderful. Okay, I think that's it. And announcements, unless anyone's got anything else they want to announce. Otherwise, we'll have a song in preparation for our reading today. It should be Reverend Mary Fonseca in a moment. And we'll have a prayer when we come back after the song. So go at this again. I've played this song to death and I actually played it in a sharing the other week, but I'm going to play it again. So it's a Beloved One by Krishna Prasad. Thank you for being patient with my Zoom skills.
Beloved one, a silent song, here with you, this heart belongs. Tears of joy brought these eyes to see, the heart that sings with yours is the heart that's free, beloved one. Beloved one, yeah, yeah, beloved one. Beloved one. And why not you? Why not today? Why not now? Let it all fall away. The one who came to you is so long gone, and all that remains is just this song of love. Beloved one, yeah, yeah, beloved one, beloved one, beloved one. Never born, never born. never died. Woe is he in this heart of mine. Everything has once been seeking every moment. Silence is speaking, beloved one. Oh, beloved one. Yeah, yeah, beloved one. Beloved one. Beloved one. Beloved one.
My favorite line in that is, the one that came to you is so long gone. And Moody says something to the words of, the one who starts the journey is not, is the one ended by the journey, or something, which I just love. So just thought I'd start with this short prayer that I have in this, it's the Mahler of God, the Moody prayer book, and then riff on that. So I just invite you to join me. O light of life, show the way beyond the person into the true heart of God. Reveal the open door so that all can pass through into the imageless self. I just want to give thanks for today, for this moment, for this opportunity to realize truth, to know myself as what I truly am, to let go of all knowing at the same time. We ask that we be filled with the clarity, the silence, the love, and the wisdom that we are. Thank you, our timeless one, that we know ourselves to be. May that be our experience. Amen. Okay. So now I'd like to introduce Reverie Mary Fonseca. I can't see her on my screen, but she might be on the one after. Obviously, I can see you, Mary. who's going to be reading today from Inaramana. And it will be exposing the I thought, sort of a shortened version of that from page 37, where I say shortened, it's just the ends cut off. And then how to awaken from the dream, which is page 53. So thank you very much, Mary. I'll let go of the mic.
You can hear me? Great. Hello, everyone. Thank you, Helen. And we're reading from Inaramana, so exposing the I thought. Let's talk for a moment of the power of the I thought. This power that I speak of is merely the power of distraction or deception, and it has no true power or effect over the heart. For the true heart knows itself and cannot be affected by distraction or deception. But the I thought has the power to keep you distracted from your heart, so that you forget for a time, possibly for a long, long time, that what it is that you want and what it is that you are not. What you want is to know self. What you are not is the I thought. I feel I must say this again and bring your attention to what I have said, because as long as you are deceived by this one deception, you cannot know the truth of self. This deception blinds you to your true nature. I say again, this deception blinds you to your true nature. And this deception is a false identity, I. What am I is a good question to ask. The mind can come up with a myriad of answers to satisfy itself with an identity, an image, that says this is what or who I am. But each of the mind's answers falls short of truth, because each of the mind's answers provide an identity thought that sets you apart from others. Here are some examples. I am man, I am woman, I am worker, I am not a worker, I am a minister, I am one who sits in silence, in stillness. I am a family man, I am a mother, I am one who has renounced family and possessions, I am a child, I am an adult, I am a person, dog, tree, I am an object or preferred idea. In short, I am separate from other objects or less preferred ideas. I can identify myself separate from other selves. This is the I thought. Relinquishment of the I thought also means relinquishment of all ideas of identity. This includes relinquishment of I am one who does not think of I. One delay thought that the I thought provides as a means of survival is, I must change my circumstances in order to do the work necessary to relinquish thoughts of I. But I would encourage one to ask, who must change circumstances? Certainly, if one asks this question, he will find that I, who feels individual and separate from the circumstance, feels the circumstance must change. Upon discovering this, one can see he is being tempted by the distraction of the I thought, and he can choose to return to his mantra instead. Every circumstance is appropriate for letting go of the false I thought, because every circumstance is being experienced now, and now is always the time to turn the attention from I thinking back to concentrated stillness in the mind. Concentrated stillness is not I thinking. It is not even I am still. You do not know the nature of the self because you believe fully that you are the I in thought. But what you are is beyond thought. Knowing the self is the goal we seek. So, how to awaken from the dream? Today, I would like to talk to you about expectations and imagination, and help you to see that expectations are imagination, so you may choose to relinquish all expectations as mere foolishness. I have already told you that I cannot tell you of yourself. I cannot. And yet you want to continue to speak of the self and talk about what the self is. You want to say that you know when someone is truly abiding in self and when he is not. You want to speak of your experiences with self and say, I have some taste of the experience of self. But I would ask you to stop and look at the discussion of self in this asking about self and this sharing of what I know about self and ask, who is the I that is thinking about self, making decisions about self, and agreeing or disagreeing on what self is? We have already seen that attachment to mind is the obstacle that blocks the realization of self. Now we must continue to look at how you are attached to mind. Questioning about self, discussion about self, and I experiences with self all continue the attachment to mind, which means that although they seem to be sincere, seeking of self, they are holding on to the identity that blocks your knowledge of self. Thank you.
Thank you, Reverend Mary. So, I was thinking today that what I wanted to share was, well, to be honest, I was very confused about what it was. And so I just kind of trusted that, I guess, it will come through when it will come through. And it never really came through. And then with this unusual experience with my computer this morning, I never really got a grip on my notes. But when, in a nutshell, I was like, Helen, you've got like 1 second. The nutshell was really I just kind of wanted to share how the importance of using all to come back to the experience. I know that if you're in Gentle Healing 3 at all at the moment, we've been looking at moving beyond words, sort of coming to the sort of understanding, if you will, that the concepts of how to awaken aren't going to be it, that simply you know, massaging the mind into a place where we can say, yes, I know that I am not a person, is not it. That's not going to be it. That this, it is in the deep experience of that, that the wisdom seems to come from and the knowing seems to come from. So I thought maybe I'd just share, you know, some of the things happening at the minute that are being helpful to me with regards to just moving deeper into experience and away from the concepts. And when I knew that it was going to be from Inner Ramana, the reading, that this much I knew. And but every page I seemed to pick up seemed to be the page to read. And it's interesting, when I did my MPP several years ago, I obviously read Teachings of Inner Ramana. And I don't remember having an opinion either way on whether I liked it or didn't like it. I just don't remember. But when we were asked to read it in Gentle Healing 2 in December, I hated it. I mean, every page, I just thought, oh my God, I just can't bear this. I felt like I was being bossed around, and I didn't believe the things were being said. I felt like it wasn't, that the teachings were for Regina. They obviously weren't for Helen Avery. And then we were asked to, you know, read it again a second time. And very conveniently, I was extremely busy with work in January, which in fairness I was. But so I didn't really sort of get into it again. But then I was due to facilitate the MPP course on Inner Ramana, so I knew then I would have to read it again. And I don't know whether it was just because I've done some like deep practice over January and February, or maybe it was going to India and having some time off of the mind just kind of silenced a bit, but it was like music to my ears. Actually, everything I read in Inner Ramana was somehow just absolutely perfect and spot on, and just deepened more into the experience. So it's just so interesting how it was a great example for me of how resistance is nothing. I mean, it's just another trick of the mind. It's not truth, because if it were true, then I'd be resisted now as I was then. On the first part of the reading that Reb Mary shared, exposing the I thought, the first thing that strikes me is this power that I speak of is merely a power of distraction or deception. This I thought has no true power or effect over the heart, for the true heart knows itself and cannot be affected by distraction or deception. And we know this when we sit in awareness or silence, or we become aware of our thoughts, or we feel become present or presence. In that moment, were we to ask the question, is there one here? Who is the I? There isn't one. So we know, does that I have problems? No. Does that I get worried or have fears? No. You're just this sort of natural awareness. So we know that there is no true power that this I thought has over the heart. And I just love this reminder in this sort of, I don't really call it a chapter, but a chapter. And there are some of the examples that it gives that I think now in where we are as a community, that we are, you know, we can firmly say that we have the experience and the intellectual awareness, but more like the wisdom coming from the experience, that we are not, you know, a man or a woman or a worker or a minister or a person, perhaps. But there are some more subtle I thoughts that arise, which is why I sort of also felt like the reading from How to Awaken the Dream was helpful, and I'll sort of wrap all this together in a moment. And that is the I thought that says things like, I am having an experience of self. I know that I am awareness. I As it says here, I have some taste of the experience of the self, or one who, you know, likes to talk about self, or discuss self, or discuss the experience. And I know if you ask any teachers or sages, they'll tell you not to talk about your experience, because whatever happens is you're actually just creating this sense that it is the I who has the experience. So there's all these kind of really subtle I thoughts that are getting in. And one that I noticed in India that has come up several times that I've sat with Muji and has really been helpful to keep being aware of is this I as the seeker. And that there, it feels very, as I say, subtle to me. It's sort of hard to catch this one that's looking for the awareness. There is an I that's looking for the awareness and then experiences the awareness. There's the I that's seeking to get back to presence. There's an I who feels, therefore, that they've lost it, that they can't get back to it, that they're in resistance to it, that they are not able to get to it because they're currently in a job that's quite mindy, or they're looking after children, or, you know, walking the dog, or they're having to focus on something else. There's all of that is seen by awareness, is seen by one that is not the I, or the small self, if you will. And how do I know? Because I'm aware of those thoughts. And it was so simple when I suddenly understood that all those thoughts have driven me mad for years. That, oh, I think I've lost it. I've lost it. I've lost it. I mean, I had it when I was sitting with Muji, and when I was in India, and when I was on retreat, and when I listened in the sanctuary, and when I did MPP. And I had it. I had it. And now it's gone. It's gone. And now it's so simple just to then recognize I'm aware of this thought and come back into what is that awareness, what, and sort of sit in that silence with that question. So that's been sort of helpful to me, is not just that, but being more alert, if you will, to those subtle I thoughts that have been coming up, especially around this notion of experiencing the self, practicing the self. I don't have time to practice the self and practice self-inquiry today, and, you know, I'm failing at doing this, and just constantly noticing, well, hang on a minute, who's aware of this thought? And that thought isn't it either. And I've talked about this before, but it's a rope and not a snake. And it is in the experience of sitting in awareness. I'm always reluctant to say sitting in awareness, because who is sitting in awareness? That you can confirm that there isn't a seeker, that there isn't one who can lose it, that it can never be lost, that you can never be lost. You just are everything and nothing. So I've often placed more emphasis on reading and studying, and now I'm like switching entirely to just experience. If I can just, and I say I, in the sort of hearing that there is this person that's now saying what she's going to do is experience. But it feels like that is what needs to be the focus, if you will, for me, without it being a focus, because it's the mind that focuses. So I've been sort of I wouldn't say even contemplating, but how to use all to keep coming back to the experience. There were a couple of things that sort of kicked this off as well. Was I spent some time in a silent retreat last November at home. I just did a 4-day silent retreat up in my home. Several days after that, no longer in a silent retreat, I was waiting for some friends to go and listen to Marianne Williamson. I was very excited about the message she was going to give. And I had this person that I brought along with me who was excited about hearing a spiritual message for the evening. And I sat waiting for my friends for dinner, or having a dinner beforehand, and they were late, not just a little bit late. You know, I noticed that they were 10 minutes late, and they were 15 minutes late, and they were 20 minutes late. And at the 20-minute mark, I noticed, Grace, really, that there was there was some judgment starting to come about. You know, 10 minutes, sure, 15, yeah, but 20 minutes? That's like pushing it, I think, as a friend, without texting to say why you're going to be late. And also, I've come in from Brooklyn and you're in Manhattan. Like, it was starting to be that. And then welled up from within, that can only say was an experience of myself as being at one with God. Therefore, who was I waiting for? And where was I going? And it was in that experience that I then was I would say that informed or shed this notion of ever having to be somewhere or wait for someone to come or be impatient about not someone coming again. I'm not saying it didn't come up again. I have been impatient and I have thought I want to go there and listen to God. But I now have had that direct experience that stay is with me now. So that is always a constant reminder, so that I've shifted from having to say to myself, you're noticing you're being impatient. You know, impatient isn't spiritual or whatever. How can you practice not being impatient? You can just sit here and you can rest and all that sort of talking to myself about it, which is really helpful because it sort of gets you in orbit of that experience. But it was the direct experience itself that enabled me to sort of fast track that, if you will. It sort of showed me that it is the experience, it's almost an embodiment, I guess, if you want to say it like that, that is the seems to be the biggest teacher. So how do we use everything to have this direct experience at all times? And obviously we ask, who am I? But I wanted to just share this from, this is Robert Adams, Silence of the Heart. And whenever I have to speak on a Sunday gathering and I'm having a mild panic attack about what I should share, I always just go, Rob Adams, help me out, and open a page, and it's always the right page. But he says here, before you ask, who am I, remember to realize that you are not the I. The I that perceives is not you, as in the small person you. In other words, what you must do is, when you refer to I, you're not talking about yourself. So can you remember that? So one of the things I found helpful is, when I ask, who am I, I'm often bringing my person with me. I'm saying, who am I? Who is Helen Avery, really? Who is Helen Avery underneath it all? And there's like this sort of, the focus of the question is understanding who the person really is, instead of asking, who am I? Like, who is the I that, just the I isness awareness? Who is that, or what is that? I know in Inner Ramana it uses what am I, which I find actually helpful, because already the who it has implied in it, like a person, if you will. So I just say that again, before you ask, who am I, remember to realize that you are not the I. So coming to these questions of, I'm nervous about sharing today, but who am I? Who am I? Not who is this person who is nervous? Because that can get you in a, well, she's nervous because she's attached to the person and she wants to look good, or, you know, she had that experience last time where she really screwed up, or, you know, it's just more mind. But if you come with the, who am I? And almost the other question would be, who is the I that's aware of this thought, can get you there. And that, for me, can be used all day. I used to have, you know, I have a job that ebbs and flows and is sometimes very intense and sometimes not. But it's a question that, so long as in the times I am not focused on the work, I can remember this, I feel like that's my job done. I don't need to worry about the fact I'm intensely focused on my job throughout the day. If I am, that's where I am. But when those gaps occur and I can find room for that question, it's helpful. Another sort of getting into this more, catching the subtle thoughts, one of the things I thought I was going to do was start writing down every I thought I had during the day, and then at night going through them and sort of ticking them off, but I didn't, and it's probably helpful. It was probably just another Helen Avery wants to be, have an enlightened Helen Avery. I don't know. I have noticed that in this sort of realm of the subtleness, there is something that happened yesterday. I was went to Rockefeller State Park, which was just beautiful. And there I was just enjoying nature. And I thought to myself, oh, this is it. I'm just like this. I can feel my presence. I'm like, I can feel my presence. Like, it's the presence that belongs to Helen Avery. And she can, like, there was still that tinge of, I can feel it. I can feel it. And I came home and didn't think much about it until Robin Adams said this. I know there are many of you who like to go hiking, who like to climb mountains and like to become part of nature. Perhaps we can understand that. And that's okay. But do not believe that these things are external from yourself. These things are yourself. You are that. When you question, to whom does this come? You again realize, it comes to me. I perceive it. Then you remember, you are not I. As in, you know, it comes to me, Helen, and Helen perceives it. Then you remember you are not that I, that Helen and the I are different, sort of. I perceives it. There is an awareness that perceives it is not this person. Yeah, in reality, you are not the perceiver. You are the witness. The I perceives it. The I is the witness. It's a little confusing, Robert Adams, because he doesn't sort of distinguish between the small self and the big self in his you and yous. So you have to kind of figure it out. But yet in reality, you, the person, are not the perceiver. You, the person, are not the witness. It is the I that perceives it. It's the I that is the witness. And this is very important. And I want you to understand it, because it can change your whole life. Whatever you see in the world, you are to realize that I perceives it. So play this game every day. Whatever you see, whether it is your body or your mind or other people, when someone does something to you you don't like, the worst thing you can do is to react. Because when you react, you are affirming your humanhood and your ego becomes stronger. But when you no longer react, the ego becomes weaker and weaker. The I, the person, and the ego are the same. I know most of you believe when you see bad things of life, you want to separate yourself from that, but it is the good things also. And I thought this was the subtle, this is where I find I'm getting caught, is on these good things. And not sort of good things like I'm really enjoying this ice cream, but just looking out on a beautiful vista and forgetting that in that moment, who is the I that perceives it? There is this sort of sense that I, Helen, is really enjoying this. I even said to Bill, I'm having the loveliest day ever. And totally could have used that wonderful experience to sort of deepen into, but who is the I? Who, to whom does this come? You are not the good things and you are not the bad things. You are no thing. You're not trying to exchange bad for good. Play this game with yourself at all times. So whenever you think of a beautiful sunset or sitting in front of a beautiful sunset, catch yourself and ask yourself, to whom has it come? It has come to me. I perceive it. And who is that I that perceives it? Remembering that you are not the I, the person is not the I. Look for that I. So, that's something I found sort of helpful to start practicing. And the other thing I just wanted to, share, and I'm sorry, this is a bit like a sharing more than a homily, but it's just the way it came today. I don't know why. That both I'm doing an online course with Adyashanti at the minute, and I've also started reading more of Bentinho, can't even say his last name, Massaro. teachings who I've never felt drawn to, but I just did this week. I had some time on my hands and felt like I wanted to read some stuff, and both recommend, which I can only align to rest, accept and trust throughout the day, is to set breaks during the day of turning within. So while you would have like a deepening meditation in the morning, perhaps awareness, watching awareness, to have that direct experience. One of the sort of complaints I often hear, and I know that I do, is as well, during the day I just forget, or during the day I'm so busy that I don't do this. It's not till like the end of the day that I remember to look within. So I've now set an alarm every hour to... just, and Bettina Masora says, take 2 to 5 seconds to just feel the presence that you are. So just be silent, and so, you know, maybe you need to ask who's aware of the silence and then move into that. And Adyashanti takes it a little further. He says that when you sit in awareness, and I say you sit, but you know what I mean, when there's the direct experience of awareness or whatever you want to call it, where the person isn't there, there are some facets, he calls them, that you emerge with, that you can, when you, you know, come back to the world of words, can say, in that moment, there was freedom or clarity or wisdom or silence or love or awareness. Probably not wisdom, it's hard to sort of see wisdom in that, but awareness, presence perhaps. And then over the course of several days, take one a day, whichever one resonates with you. And, you know, if you set your alarm for every hour, whatever it is, at that moment, you just tune in to that which you know, because it's been your direct experience, and it's something that, although it's a word, that word is like a bridge for you back to that place that you can sort of tune into. So you can sort of, if you pick the word love, for example, you will look within and find that loving presence within yourself. And there is something in this constant tuning in throughout the day that just seems to stabilize you more, so that the attention that's often going outwards into the thoughts and the things outside and sort of getting caught up in the senses comes back more easily to rest in the awareness that you are. And I found this really, really helpful. Like, it's deeply changed in just a few days of applying this, of just setting the alarm. Now I don't even really need to set the alarm. In just a few days, I'm just naturally doing it, which I've heard Regina say many times, but for some reason, this time it's landed and I'm doing it. Is just this, it's like a, it feels like a training of attention, but it's like, you know, it's, I don't know what that would be. But it feels like a training of attention to come back and rest in the awareness that it is. And so, and this is, to me, just building the amount of times I have a direct experience in the day. But it's hard to do when you've got chores to do and you're not in a retreat. But sort of building on these blocks, if you will, it almost feels less like a practice, less like Helen's doing a thing, And just like, no, there is a direct experience happening several times a day. So I found that very helpful. How are we doing on time? 11:08. Let's just see. Just a final other practice, let's say practice it's been helpful in having more of an experience rather than a learning. And I talked about this in my sharing on Wednesday, but now I've sort of applied it to more of the senses, is that Adyashanti talks about listening to spiritual teachings, but I also see this as if you're contemplating as if you were listening to like leaves rustling in trees. And I don't want to sort of reiterate what I said too much, but it's that when you just sort of are listening to leaves rustling in trees, there is you're not focused on anything, you're not concentrating on anything, you're not bringing the mind, you don't have expectations about what those leaves are doing, you're not comparing it to leaves how they sounded in the past. There's just like a really open listening happening, and that is the more I do that, the more I feel that that is presence. And like it feels as a direct experience, like the mind has gone, like it's very similar to me to the sense of awareness, watching awareness. That's it. There's like this just sort of open listening. And when I was sort of thinking about the senses and how, you know, some of the teachings of yoga are, or a teaching of yoga is that the senses go out and then the mind interacts with the senses, and then that's how you sort of end up going off on this journey. But there are lots of teachings that talk about how the senses can be used to draw you back in. And I feel like this is this teaching of Adyashanti, is like to listen with this open, gentle listening in presence almost, is one of those of using the senses, which you can do all throughout the day, because we're always using our senses to come back in. So I did a bit of a contemplation. Well, I just wrote some things down. So we have trained the senses to gather information based on past information. So for example, when I look at this mug, I'm already bringing to this mug thoughts about other mugs. I've got thoughts about Lionel Richie and how this makes me laugh and who bought it for me. And I have expectations that this mug is not going to break off in my hand, and maybe there's a chip on. So already I'm coming with this past, you know, stuff through the senses, just through the senses of my eyes looking at this. And already I'm bringing in information and trying to gather information, how much tea is left in my mug. And in that, we no longer look upon anything with our eyes, or we taste anything, touch anything, hear anything, or smell anything without comparing, analyzing, problem solving, risk mitigating, desiring something, expecting something. The intention behind what we bring to our senses is to understand with the mind. But what about a moment when you gaze upon a view, like a sweeping view of a valley or a forest? Or you hear the rustle of leaves in a tree, or you not lie beneath like a really soft blanket. In those moments, you feel peace because the mind is not the one present to the senses. The mind is not focusing on the senses, having expectations of the senses, bringing all the mind that the mind does to the senses at that moment. It's like the senses are in your presence, in the presence of you. They are within your awareness. Your awareness is within them. There is no focus. It is this way of using the senses, or you could say allowing senses, being with senses, presence, bringing presence to senses, or bringing the senses to presence, that we discover true sight, true listening, true touch, true taste, true smell. So that the seeing of a stone, because I was looking at a stone to practice this, it's not a seeing of the stone, it's just isness interacting with isness. And so one of the things I thought I might or one of the sort of, I guess, practice I came away from this with is that throughout my day, I'm forever interacting with my senses. So it's just always a perfect time to have a direct experience by sort of withdrawing and just having this real open experience, if you will, of whatever it is I'm interacting with, and then noticing the awareness of that. So it's 11:15. I think I'm going to stop now. Rambled a lot. So thank you for bearing with me today. I'm just going to play a song. And if you have anything to share, please, we'll come back and you can share it. I'd like to remind you about your donations. I think Dawn's just posted a link where you can donate, or you can go on to awakening-together.org website under donations. So, in the honouring of discovering rather than learning, and experiencing, again, rather than learning, I sort of see us as explorers and discoverers into the mystery. So I thought I would play this classic song by Van Morrison.
Born before the wind, also younger than the sun. Yeah, the bonnie boat was won as we sail into the mystic. Oh, I can now hear the sailors cry. Smell the sea and feel the sky. Let your soul and spirit fly into the mystic. And when that foghorn blows, I will be coming home. Yeah, when the foghorn blows, I wanna hear it. I don't have to fear that I wanna rock your gypsy soul. Just like way back in the days of old. And magnificently we will fold into the mystic. That foghorn, you know I will be coming home. Yeah, when that foghorn whistle blows, I gotta hear it. I don't have to fear it, and I wanna rock your gypsy soul, just like way back in the day. Together we will fold into the mystic. Come on, girl.
And the man. Right, I'm just going to have a quick run through these, the chat. I can see them. Dawn says, I feel these practices are actually doable. They are. I mean, the funny thing is we're aware every single moment of who we are. And even in the times we're not aware, like I was thinking about, oh, I just was at work and I wasn't present. But if I reflect, I was present to the entire experience, obviously, because I was there. So, you know, it's the mind catches you like that. But until you're fully stabilized in the awareness that you're the awareness, then yeah, it's great. Ron says, I love the idea of identifying touch points throughout the day that have caught consciousness accidentally at rest and then use the identifying word to go back to that place. Yes. Yeah, that those points during the day are really very quickly deepened and practiced. Rayla says, thank you. Connie, hello. It's something you posted. Cheryl says, thank you. I chose the word remember to prompt me to go within. Thank you for the reminder. And says, thank you. Thank you for the Britannia message. Would anyone like to share?
Carla had her hand up first.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm not seeing the hand. So I'm just going to drop the mic. I can, maybe Dawn, you can.
Yeah, Carla, go. You can do it now.
Okay, thank you. I think last time I didn't unmute myself. I hope you put a thumbs up, please, if you can hear me. Yes, thank you. So I think my video is not on my phone. So look, even in this 10 seconds, I used I multiple times. How do you do that? How do you experience the world? How do you relate to people and not say the I? Maybe it's, you still say it, but you feel into it. You feel not disconnected from it, but don't identify with it. So first off, I want to say, Sarah is again, I. Thank you, Helen. Thank you, life. Thank you, self, for bringing this teaching into my awareness at this moment. Very good reminder to pause all the time and not to just run headfirst into the eye. And the identification with the whole myriad of identification that comes with it. The I think, here it is again, is the sense of identification. But thank you, here it goes. It's, how is it possible to ever communicate with others? And communication itself is a form of, I don't know, disconnection, or I don't know what it is, but, and I'm learning through all my communication, but the Carla self is going to go head off to church now. So thank you for this moment of just hearing myself, hearing all the eyes I use. And here it is again. I think I'm going to start recording myself, speaking to myself, and then listen back and see how many eyes I use. It's so such a great teaching. So thank you so much, and have a blessed day.
Thank you, caller. Yeah, maybe Regina, you can share some light on not to get caught up in using I or not worrying about it.
Well, I can speak to that. First of all, there's nothing wrong with the word I. Muji says, and Carla also said it, Muji says it's it depends on what I means to you. Carla called it being identified with, but he says, Muji says, God says I, and the devil says I. Right? You know, just using those Christian symbols. So what is I? You know, so when you say I, are you I the person? Or are you the I that's aware of I, the person, which Ramana Maharshi calls I, right? But the word I, if you try and get rid of the word I, you're just going to sound weird. So, but what I wanted to comment on a couple things that you said, Helen, because actually you gracefully, by talking about yourself, pointed out two or three, I took notes, so I'll go back and look at them, two or three really, really common mistakes. And I thought it was really worth pointing them out again to help bring awareness to them so everybody can kind of watch for those mistakes in themselves. One of the mistakes was, you said, when I ask, who am I often bring the person with me. And that is something I have observed during dyads. And as we've mentioned, dyads are really, really powerful. And of course, they're more powerful if you really know how to use that time in dyad. And we do have dyads coming up in April. We have dyads coming up again in October. And of course, at the dyads, you know, we'll attempt to help people. But what happens during dyads, when you go into dyads, you're asking usually either, who am I or what am I? But the goal is to look beyond the personality, not at the personality. And so many people in dyads spend time looking at the personality, and they actually spend their 5 minutes with their partner telling stories. Like, oh, I get really annoyed with my aunt. I don't know what that's about. You know, every time she does, and they haven't looked from back here yet. And so, you know, what who am I means is, what is it that sees this annoyance with the aunt? So, you know, if I'm in a dyad and I close my eyes and I ask, what am I? And this memory of my aunt comes up and how annoyed I am with her, then, you know, I would still describe that. I would say, all right, I'm noticing this thought of the aunt. I'm noticing this feeling of annoyance with the thought of the aunt. I'm noticing that it feels like it's right here in the chest. What am I? You know, so after you describe it briefly, you then ask, what am I again? And the attempt is to move back and to get that genuine sense that you're the observer of all this, that you're not this, right? So so again, the way you worded it was perfect. When I ask, who am I often bring the person with me. That's the error. And it was such a beautiful expression of a very common error that I thought it was worth reemphasizing. And that will help people maybe with the self-inquiry, whether they're doing it alone, in a journal, or in a dyad. The other thing, the reference, this came from Robert Adams, the reference to hiking or beauty or a sunset or the ocean or whatever we want to talk about. I have stood with people more times than I can count who in a very heady way will be looking at something beautiful, especially since I've been here in Colorado and people come here to visit. They'll look at it and they'll say, I'm that. And they point at it. I'm that. That's not true. That's a total misunderstanding of the teaching. I mean, completely, completely wrong. And so it's really beautiful that you brought that out today. Robert Adams said it correctly. To whom does this come? What you want to notice is that you are the light, the awareness that enables that appearance. Not I am that appearance, right? That's going to keep you stuck in projection. It's an outward thought. It's pure imagination. It's pure heady. You know, an experience may come sometime, a genuine experience where you'll feel yourself as everything, and that's different. But that's not what people do. They're like, I'm that, you know, because they read it in A Course in Miracles, and dang it, I'm that. So instead of I'm that, what you really want to do is, to whom does this appear? What is here that's always here, that's aware of this magnificent beauty? What's here that's always here, that's aware of this appreciation of this magnificent beauty? Because that's the same thing that's here when I'm looking at trash in a gutter, right? And so it's really important to become aware of this. You want to bring it in, not push it out, right? Bring it in. Not push it out. So that was magnificent that you brought that up. And it seems like there was one more. Oh, the other one was, when you no longer react to life, the ego becomes weaker. And what you pointed out is that, you know, you practice this sometimes, at least with the bad things. You know, like maybe the boyfriend says something and you feel the annoyance arising and you choose not to react. And I think a lot of people are really learning to do that, even if they haven't mastered that yet. They're learning to do that. But what you pointed out was that's also true with the good things. You know, that is also true with the, oh my gosh, you know, this wonderful sunset. Oh my gosh. But again, throwing your head completely out there and reacting in a completely out there way. That enlivens the ego as much as reacting to the bad things. So learning to always pull the attention back in, right? Always pull the attention back in. That's what weakens the ego. Just think of the ego as out and the true self is in. And whenever the ego goes, whenever the attention goes out, the tension goes out, whether it's out good, out bad, out I love this party, out I love this movie, out, you know, out, and completely forgetting in, you're enlivening the ego. So out is ego, in, focusing in, being very devotional. Even when you're listening to someone who's listening, that weakens the ego. So three magnificent points. I hope you don't mind that I reiterated them. I'm done.
Thank you. I've just found that really helpful. So one of the practices Bentinho says is you take an object every day, and you just look at it and you, with the open looking, that is, what is this? And I'm struggling with it because I'm going, I think I'm supposed to know I'm that. I think I'm supposed to know that I am this rock. And I've been like, this is not it. But through the practice of looking at this stone, there has been like a shift in that awareness slowly. I still don't know what I'm looking at. I mean, I still couldn't tell you. I've had an experience of the presence of this stone is the same as the presence of me, blah, blah, blah. I haven't. But it's certainly, that was really helpful what you just said about not putting that, I am that on it. Thank you. Well, thank you. Kathy's got her hand up. I see it's 11:30. I don't know whether, Dawn, you tell me, do we just roll it in or do we have this in fellowship?
We can allow Kathy to share in the fellowship half hour. So that would be awesome.
Great. Yeah. So thank you, everyone. thanks for being here and all your comments and chats. And I wish you all a really blessed week. And I hope you find lots of four-leaf clovers. So, thanks, Dawn. Thanks.